Hello, and welcome to Words of Wisdom, a podcast dedicated to reflecting on the wisdom of the Book of Proverbs. Your host is Dr. Jerry Weirwool, who will share life-giving truth from Proverbs that will help us become wise and discerning. Wisdom is a journey, and we hope you will join us for this exciting adventure.
In the previous episode, we looked at the personification of wisdom in Proverbs chapter 9, commonly referred to as Lady Wisdom. We noted the great skill and craftsmanship of Lady Wisdom in building her house, and her generosity and hospitality in preparing a grand feast for her guests. She didn't hoard her wealth, but used it as a means to bless her guests. Moreover, we saw how Lady Wisdom was depicted as masterfully coordinating the work of her household by instructing her servants to broadcast her invitation for all to come and enjoy the gourmet banquet she has prepared in her luxurious home. Now, Lady Wisdom's invitation goes out to all people, but she is particularly focused on targeting a certain category of people, the naive. If you remember from the last episode, to be naive means to be simple-minded, inexperienced, or ignorant. Being naive is characterized by poor judgment and a lack of depth in understanding. Thus, in chapter 9, we see both Lady Wisdom and Lady Folly appealing to those who are naive because they lack sense. They lack the ability to discern and understand things because they don't yet have wisdom. And so, Lady Wisdom's invitation is specifically directed to them as she says, "Whoever is naive, let him turn in here." To the one lacking sense, she says, "Come, eat my bread and drink my wine that I have mixed." What Lady Wisdom is offering is more than just simply a meal. She is offering her guests the opportunity to learn wisdom. And that is why in verse 6, following her invitation to come and dine with her, Lady Wisdom gives this charge to all who will listen. "Leave your naive ways and live, and go straight ahead on the road of understanding." The bottom line of Lady Wisdom's efforts is that she is seeking to save the naive from their foolish ways, from their present condition of lacking sense. The Hebrew phrase translated "lacking sense" literally means to lack heart, where the heart is put by metonymy for a person's mind and their understanding and capacity to exercise sound judgment. However, it takes knowledge to have understanding and sound judgment, but there is more knowledge today than there was back in the ancient biblical times. If we could represent all the accumulated knowledge of humankind from Adam and Eve up through the year 1845 AD as being 1 inch tall, then from 1845 to 1945, the stack of knowledge would grow to about 3 inches, meaning the amount of knowledge that humanity possesses tripled within 100 years. And then from 1945 to 1975, the total knowledge of humanity would reach the height of the Washington Monument, which is 555 feet high. That is more than a 2,000% increase in knowledge in 30 years. In his best-selling book called Critical Path in 1982, mathematician and inventor Buckminster Fuller presented his view of the growth rate of human knowledge. He called it the knowledge doubling curve. He argued that up to the 20th century, knowledge doubled approximately every century. But following the end of World War II, the acquisition of human knowledge has gone from doubling every century to now doubling every 25 years. And he predicted that it would continue to accelerate. Researcher David Russell Schilling wrote, "By the year 2010, nanotechnology has been doubling every 2 years, and clinical knowledge every 18 months. Therefore, on average, human knowledge is doubling every 13 months. IBM forecasted that in following 2010, knowledge would double every 12 hours. And I don't think that prediction is too far off. There has been a massive explosion of data in the past decade that has done nothing except expand further and further. Just the sheer amount of information available is astounding. For example, in 2010, the average upload of new video content to YouTube was approximately 24 hours of new video each minute. In 2015, it was about 100 hours per minute. And in 2019, the average has jumped to 500 hours of new video uploaded per minute. That's 82.2 years of new videos uploaded each day. And that's just to YouTube alone. But all this vast accumulation of knowledge does nothing to stop the foolishness of human stupidity. We're still making the same foolish choices in life that we've always made. Just because we now have fancy cars, digital technology, advanced medicine, and an incredible storehouse of knowledge about nature, the world, and the universe, it does not stop us from making poor choices in what we say and do. The growth of knowledge has not stopped the continued propagation of foolishness. We have just found new ways to be stupid. Albert Einstein has been quoted as saying, "Only two things are infinite, the universe and human stupidity, and I'm not yet completely sure about the universe." In the proverb, Lady Wisdom's command to leave your naive ways, it means more than just learning some new facts or ways of doing things. The Hebrew word translated leave means to forsake or to abandon. It denotes leaving behind and getting away from something, putting distance between us and it so that we will not associate ourselves or be involved. Therefore, leaving one's naive ways means to have a complete shift in one's way of life away from being naive, and thus by implication, moving toward being wise. Such a change involves a complete alteration in our habits, speech, mental processes, and more. And as most of us can attest, this sort of change is not a quick and easy thing. Concerning adopting a new habit in our life, research shows that it can take a significantly long time to adopt a new practice. In a clinical study done in 2009 with 96 individuals, it took an average of 66 days for a new habit, such as drinking a glass of water before bed, to become somewhat automatic and not seem difficult or require much thinking in order to successfully do. The results varied drastically, as it took some individuals as little as 18 days for the new practice to feel normal, but for others it took over 254 days in order for the new practice to feel somewhat normal, but not yet second nature. Trying to build a new habit in life depends upon the consistency with which one attempts to implement the change. Trying to do some new action in our life carries with it a number of challenges, but we are talking about trying to change the way we think and our values or the way we speak, then we're talking about doing something much deeper and more complex. Thought patterns are habits, just like our behaviors, but they are often much more deeply ingrained in our psyche. Our ability to adapt and change how we think is determined by a number of factors, including most significantly, aspects of our personality. Our personal level of neuroticism, our openness to change and new experiences, and our level of critical thinking, they all play an important part in our psychology. Depending on whether we learn quickly, we can change our mind easily, or we readily admit when we are wrong, or we reflect upon ourselves and many other qualities, these will largely influence how much effort it will take to change the way we think. But there are experiences that can help fast-track changes in how we think, such as a crisis. If we are not a very flexible person, or if we are closed off to new ideas and information, if we are content with where we are at in life and who we are, comfortable with our own beliefs and our understanding of the world, then we will probably struggle to implement change in our life, especially in our values, priorities, and patterns of thinking. But if we come face to face with a crisis, where we're either forced to change or else suffer some drastic consequence, that emotionally volatile state can have a powerful effect on our psyche and can cause us to make significant changes in a short amount of time. However, after the crisis is averted and the pressure to change is lifted, oftentimes people will revert back to former ways of behavior and patterns of thinking. What this means is that true change really requires a personal and internal desire. External circumstances can be a catalyst by which change can be made quickly. But if the change is not embraced as inherently good in the mind of the individual, then it will likely not last. especially when circumstances change and there is no need to continue in the new behavior or way of thinking. Consider, for a second, an example in your own life. Has someone ever tried to get you to adopt a new habit, like a way of speaking, acting, or thinking? For example, perhaps a spouse or friend has suggested a new diet or exercise routine or spending habits that you really didn't like or really didn't want to do. You might have agreed with them in a superficial manner, such as that it makes logical sense, or you agreed with the accompanying health or life benefits that the new habit could produce for you. But if our heart is not in it, how long does it take before we eventually revert back to what we were doing before? Unless we find an internal motivating desire that would cause us to want to change for our own sake or for a meaningful reason to us, we are probably doomed to experience a very short-lived habit. As Lady Wisdom stipulates in the proverb, the goal of leaving one's naive ways is so that we can live. To live means more than just simply to be alive. To truly live, one must exercise wisdom. Wisdom brings the fullness of life, where a person can have healthy relationships, make sound decisions, enjoy success and prosperity, and have peace and happiness. Foolishness kills these qualities of life and obstructs us from being able to enjoy it the way that Yahweh God designed for us to. In conjunction with leaving our naivety, the accompanying action that Lady Wisdom exhorts us to take is to go straight ahead on the road of understanding. Lady Wisdom's instruction is twofold. First, leave. Second, go. Leave behind our former naive way of life and go toward a different way of life, one that is based on wisdom and understanding. To go straight ahead, it refers to being determined and walking with intention toward a specific destination, not veering off to the left or the right, but continuing to advance away from where we were. And that direction, according to Lady Wisdom, is the road of understanding. The use of road as a metaphor is quite common in the Book of Proverbs. It represents one's way of life. That is, how they choose to live, the sort of people they associate with, and the decisions they make. The idea being conveyed is closely associated with the notion of walking, as representing the way we live and our manner of conduct. Thus, Lady Wisdom is saying, don't walk after the way of fools. That is, don't walk down the path in life that they are on. Rather, walk on the road of understanding with the wise. But leaving behind foolish ways and walking on the road of understanding is not a simple one-time decision that a person makes. A person trying to leave naive and foolish ways may find many reasons, including pleasures and pressures, to return to foolish ways. But Lady Wisdom calls to us and admonishes us to continue walking on the road of understanding. In order to illustrate this proverb, I want to read a famous parable of Jesus in Luke chapter 15. In the Gospel of Luke chapter 15, this parable is often called the parable of the prodigal son, and it deals with recognizing one's foolishness and then turning away and leaving it behind. In Luke chapter 15, verse 11, it says, "Then Jesus said, a man had two sons. The younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of the estate that will belong to me.' So he divided his assets between them. After a few days, the younger son gathered together all that he had and left on a journey to a distant country. And there he squandered his wealth with a wild lifestyle." The story begins with the younger son asking his father for his inheritance prior to his father's death. This was something highly irregular in the biblical culture and can be viewed as insulting and shameful to the father, because it indicates that the younger son is impatient and wants to set off and do his own thing as though his father were already dead. To take your inheritance and leave was an act that represented one's desire to not be identified with the family any longer. Well, pretty quickly after moving to a distant country, we see that the younger son is reckless and foolish, wasting all his wealth on a wild lifestyle. We could probably sum up his foolish spending as likely consisting of food, women, and drinking. But there's also probably some gambling in there and some unnecessary extravagant purchases too. Needless to say, the younger son was completely irresponsible with his money and chose to dissipate his father's hard-earned wealth on unrestrained desires and profligacy. Now, continuing on in the story, we'll see what the younger son does next. It says, "Then, after he had spent everything, a severe famine took place in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and worked for one of the citizens of that country, who sent him to his field to feed pigs. He was longing to eat the carob pods the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. But when he came to his senses, he said, 'How many of my father's hired workers have food enough to spare? But here I am dying from hunger. I will get up and go to my father and say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me like one of your hired workers.'" What this part of the parable told us is that after the younger son had squandered all that he had to figure out how to provide for himself so that he could eat. So he got a job working for a farmer. The irony in this circumstance is incredible. The younger son goes from being the son of a wealthy farmer and landowner to a hired servant in a foreign country feeding pigs. The desperation must have been enormous for the younger son to stoop this low. For a Jewish man in the biblical times, such employment was both disgraceful and humiliating. But at some point, the younger son came to his senses and decided that it would be better to return home and work for his father rather than to stay here in this pitiful predicament and suffer. He even began to rehearse his apology that he would give to his father when he saw him. We can note two important things that happened here. First, the younger son recognized his dire circumstances. In other words, he realized that he was facing a crisis and needed to do something to change what was going on. And second, he humbled himself to the point of being willing to return home to ask forgiveness from his family that he had shamed and walked away from. Both of these aspects of the story indicate a shift in the younger son away from his foolish and former naive ways. As we keep reading, the story unfolds further. It says, "So he got up and went to his father, but while he was still a long way from home, his father saw him, and his heart went out to him. He ran and hugged his son and kissed him. Then his son said to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son.' But the father said to his servants, 'Hurry, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let us eat and celebrate, because this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found.' So they began to celebrate." One thing to make clear is that the story doesn't tell us much about the nature of the younger son's reform and whether he forsook his prior foolish ways of living once he returned home. But such a change in the younger son's way of life is strongly implied by the storyline of the parable. It seems the life crisis prompted the younger son to wake up to reality and to learn from his mistakes. Nevertheless, we do know that he physically left behind the distant country where he had lived and wasted all of his family's money that he had inherited and made the long trip back home to his family. Along with his confession of sin, these actions suggest that he understood his foolishness and was repentant and seeking to leave it behind and to begin a new way of life back at home. Even though he thought it would be nothing more than becoming a hired servant working for his family. Well, it is my hope that none of us have to experience a crisis of this magnitude in order to understand our foolish ways and to grasp the value of wise living. But life will teach us different lessons based on the choices we make. And if we want to live and do well in our jobs, relationships, and communities, then we cannot be complacent toward our foolishness. We must actively and intentionally leave it behind, and with our determination, continue to walk on the road of understanding which leads toward wisdom. Let's leave behind our foolish ways and live. This is the wisdom of the proverb.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Words of Wisdom podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, we would be so appreciative if you would share this podcast with your friends. And if you have been blessed by this work, please consider supporting the podcast by clicking on the donation link in the description.